On the Wintrust Business Lunch with Farron Dogs, the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial. HarrisonWallace.com is the website. Maybe the big news about the stock market today is there's not a lot of big news about the stock market today, Farron.
Hi, John. Yes, that seems to be the theme today. And I think going into a three-day weekend, that kind of puts people back and just kind of hold off on making any big moves one way or the other, because things are moving fast and who knows what might happen in the next 3 days.
Yeah, right. Although would you describe, though, the last 3 weeks as having been volatile on the market, or how would you describe it? I don't know that you would. What would you say?
No, I really wouldn't describe it as volatile. We, of course, had the CPI number come out a little hotter than expected. But I think, you know, even I think there was some adjustment to that by the end of the day, people realizing that, you know, that could have been a one-time blip in that. And I really do believe the focus is slowly coming off of the Fed, and people aren't necessarily counting on, you know, a reduction in interest rates, not nearly as many as they originally were, say, third, fourth quarter last year. Yeah. So I think now the focus has gone more towards earnings of, you know, how companies are doing, the employment picture, and things that really should be baked into a stock price itself. So it's been nice to see that transition because, as I know I've mentioned in the past, when the market is just driven by what the Fed is going to do, that's not really a healthy market.
Well, that was a lot of last year, but what do you make of the idea that maybe the Fed not only won't lower rates this year, but might raise it once?
I really don't see an increase. I think they'll be very vigilant to figure out, you know, what some of these new policies that are being implemented, how they're going to impact the employment picture and obviously potential inflation. But I think they're going to be very standoffish. I think they're going to be wait and see. I wouldn't see them making any moves really till maybe July what's coming up.
Yeah. What's the rationale for describing the inflation number as a blip?
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, I mean, I was telling myself I'm not going to talk about eggs today, but you know, obviously, that's been the big driver. And I think we have seen a lot of inflation, especially in the food and shelter still. And thankfully, the supply is finally coming to meet demand on the housing side of things, I think, a little bit better. But I do think that there was just, I think it was just some more money coming into the market towards the end of the fourth quarter. That was driving up overall prices, and I really think it'll come back into check.
I wonder if Donald Trump and Elon Musk have said there's going to be some pain if a million employees fall off the federal payroll and if inflation inches up for a variety of reasons. I wonder if that's just something we're going to have to live with, like the same way that the 30-year fixed is stuck at around 7, maybe a little bit under today, but that's kind of the hard number for a while now. I wonder, too, if just a higher inflation number is something we're going to have to get used to.
Well, you know, we lived with such low inflation for many, many years. And when I do planning for clients, I actually factor in a 4% rate of inflation because before the credit crisis, you know, the inflation rate was on a 20-year average, close to 4%. And then, of course, we had such low interest rates, and that really led to some very low inflation. And things were cooking along, and of course, they had to have them that low just because, you know, there was a lot of strife during the credit crisis. And I think that we will have to get to a new normal. I think we do have to get to a new normal, and maybe it is a little bit above 2%. And I don't think that that's excessive. Certainly other countries have it a lot worse than that.
No kidding.
And, You know, I think that if we had reasonable interest rates, and I look back to like the mid-90s when interest rates were at 6% on mortgages, and that was okay, and you came up with 20% down, and maybe that's the new normal, and that would be okay, because I don't think we've really had a normal economy and market, so to speak, really since the credit crisis, because we had so much stimulus put into the market during that period of time, finally coming out of it. And then, of course, we get hit with COVID and more stimulus. And it just seems like really the last 15 years has been stimulus package after stimulus package. And that's not really what healthy markets are built on.
You can get a mortgage now with 5% down. And once upon a time, everybody thought you needed 20% down. Mm-hmm. I'd like the borrowing rate to be as low as possible. But I do think there's something that reins in people's expectations or use of money if they have to come up with 20% down. That's equity in a home. Things can go south, but you'll have money in your house. And that hasn't been the case for a lot of people. And the expectations are so high for some of these homeowners. Your first home doesn't have to be your last home. Whatever happened to starter homes, you know?
Right. You just don't see many of those anymore. I mean, a lot of my clients, adult children, they kind of want to hang out and rent for a while until they can afford their dream home. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with having a starter home and getting used to home ownership and everything that goes along with it, and then trading up, so to speak. And we just don't see a lot of that anymore, which is too bad. And because I think there are a lot of people paying really high rents that could be going into a reasonable mortgage, even if they were borrowing at, you know, 6, 6.5, 7%. And the other thing is, I mean, it is okay if they do come up with 5%. Of course, they have to have that private mortgage insurance. But again, we saw it happen in the credit crisis. People were having to do, you know, the selling below what they owed and foreclosures, and we don't want to get back into that.
We're talking to Farron Doggs on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's with Harrison Wallace Financial Group, harrisonwallace.com. By the way, we're all expert economists now, Farron. What's your take on the tariff talk? I know it's been a negotiation tool as much as a financial one, but these steel tariffs seem to be real. What do you think the impact is going to be on the U.S. economy?
That's a great question. And I know there are a lot of people that are super concerned about it. I've had even clients call me about it. And I think, like, with the reciprocal tariffs that he signed the EO on yesterday, you know, that's really just leveling the playing field. And it's giving those countries that have been, you know, tariffing our products, an opportunity to either lower those tariffs, take them off, or else we're just going to match them. And I don't see that necessarily as a bad thing. Some of these agreements that we have been in date back to like World War II, and when the U.S. was being very generous in trying to help those countries get back on their feet. And it's really just never been readdressed. Right. And so I think that it's a great opportunity for some fair trade to start taking place, or more fair trade, which should help the consumer. You know, so if they do take off a tariff, you know, a foreign country doesn't charge us tariffs, hopefully that would help lower the cost of that particular product, because we don't have to bake that in to the sale price. Or maybe it does bring more manufacturing over here back to the U.S., where we can have some jobs that are suited for people that don't necessarily want to be in corporate America, that don't necessarily want to go to school. Maybe they want to get in the trades, or maybe they are comfortable just having an opportunity to make a decent living, but maybe they don't necessarily need a degree to do it. And we're seeing a trend that way. And I think we'll see a resurgence of the trade schools. And I think that's a really positive thing.
Yeah. That's interesting that you suggest that rather than matching the tariff, maybe China or South Korea somewhere eliminates their tariff on our exports, which makes our products more competitive overseas. I haven't heard the war being waged that way so much as we're going to ratchet it up and it gets more expensive for everybody. Again, all right. We're all expert economists now, but everything I read from every credible source I see says that tariffs are ultimately bad for the consumers. If we could use the lever to eliminate tariffs, that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, I think, and I really believe that that's an end game. You know, that's the end game, because what is the benefit if everyone's going to be paying 10% more or 15% more? Well, I mean, if, you know, how about we just take that off and then, you know, it's the same. It's the same deal. And everyone can still make their margins, make a profit, and it's less expensive for the consumer all the way around.
Yeah, but I also have this observation, and I wonder what your reaction to this is. I didn't know we had it so bad. As consumers, prices are fairly inexpensive for Americans. Inflation be damned. By and large, if you go to Walmart, if you go to Target, if you want to buy fast food, I'm just thinking of the things that we consume regularly in America, it's not that expensive. And I think in part it is because we haven't thrown a heavy tariff on a lot of these things that are coming in. Now, I understand why we would want to level the playing field. But at the end of the day, if it's tariff for tariff, things are going to get more expensive. If, for instance, it becomes just as economically viable to produce things in the United States, those things produced in the United States will come at a higher cost. We'll have to pay that price locally. We will pay more for those things. So that's the flip side of the coin you and I are talking about.
Sure. And I definitely see that side of it as well. And I think there is probably going to be something that happens in the middle along with that. But if we are producing more products here at home and going back to, you know, yeah, you can buy things at Walmart and inexpensive things. And, you know, you look back to the 70s, 80s, early 90s, when we didn't have this mass production of basically disposable goods. And I think about, you know, back in the day, I mean, my parents would have a washer and dryer that lasted for 25 years. Because the quality of the product was there. And now, I remember my first washer and dryer, they were saying, oh, well, these are really only built to last 7 years. That's what the repair person tells me. I'm like, really? They go, yeah, you know, all the parts are now plastic and this and that. And so there's a lot of problems with them as they age. And it's like, we've all gotten hooked on cheap products. And so everything's disposable these days. And so if we could go back to a more where you have a quality product, sure, you may pay more for it, but you don't have to replace it every 3 or 4 years. And that would be a really positive thing, I think, overall. And if we can bring more jobs back over here that are appealing to that group of people that don't necessarily feel they want to go to college for 4 years and get a degree, and don't need a degree, I think that's a win all the way around.
I heard that far and away the number one automobile manufacturer in the world now is China. And China used to make little crappy cars, and they didn't really penetrate the U.S. marketplace. They still don't much, but they do throughout the rest of the world, and they're making better cars. Meanwhile, if you wanted to sell a high-end SUV, if you wanted to sell a Ford or Chevy or whatever's manufactured here, a $70,000 SUV in China, it would cost $170,000 or $140,000. It would be double the price. The tariff would be 100%. So we're not getting penetration in China, the giant consumer market it is. And China has upped their game. The cars coming out of China are better than they've ever been and are now competitive with everybody else in the world.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, that's happened over time. And we are seeing more and more competition with that. And I know that they were talking about that the other day with the automobile specifically, that you don't see Chevys and Fords in Europe.
No.
You know, and a lot of that does have to do with the tariffs that are imposed, and it makes it very expensive. But it is interesting that I was just helping a friend of my son's purchase a car, and he went with a U.S. brand name, but I was thrown back when I read the sticker, and it's, you know, they have to list where the components are made. And only 3% of that car was manufactured in the United States.
Hmm.
And here you think you're purchasing, you know, it's a U.S. brand, and I'm not going to say which one, but it's a U.S. brand, and you think you're buying American, and then it's like, hold it. All of these pieces are manufactured in foreign countries. And so if we can really get to a point where, you know, if it's made in America, it's truly made in America. And I think that that would be good for not only our economy and our employment picture and just the health of the general consumer and saver, but that helps globally as well for everyone to have a level playing field.
When I get my magic wand, when I become king, I'm also going to get more American kids interested in STEM. We need to turn out more science and math and engineering kids. China is now graduating as many STEM students as we have students. They have as many kids coming out with engineering and math degrees as we have kids in college. So we have to take them and this seriously. Farron Dogs is the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial. Interesting, Farron. Thanks for your insight today.
You bet. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
He's at harrisonwallace.com. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Chip Lupo is a writer and analyst at Wallet Hub, and he's here to remind you a little bit about the debt you're carrying and what that means for your overall health. Hey, Chip, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm not surprised to hear that a lot of us are in debt, and maybe more than we care to think about. The consequences, though, are maybe something we don't realize. Talk a little bit about that. What's your latest report?
Well, what we found, let's talk about the big picture first, because we're talking about total household debt. So that includes everything from mortgages, personal loans, credit cards, car loans. At the end of 2024, we're talking a number of just north of $18 trillion, okay, and an average debt per household of almost $150,000, okay? Now, of course, there are a number of reasons why people get into debt. Inflation, the economic picture we've been in the last 4 years or so is a culprit. Life events, job losses, maybe an additional child. And just people just poorly managing their finances, not budgeting properly or overspending. So there's a number of reasons for that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing in our study was that, and there are 2 in 5 Americans that do say that their household is struggling with debt, and nearly 1 in 3 of those think that household debt is actually affecting their health.
I wonder how they come to that conclusion. How is debt affecting, well, I guess you're not able to afford medical care, huh?
Well, that's one way to look at it, but people could be, you know, mental anguish perhaps, or just maybe physically ill, just from the fact of just this being just saddled with just this massive debt.
Yeah. If you have some kind of debt is good, right? Obviously, a mortgage is debt that we have all decided is actually a long-term asset. So $150,000 doesn't scare me if a lot of that is your mortgage. But I do know that credit card is the big problem for Americans. What do you know about that?
Well, credit card is the big thing. You raise an interesting point, because things like mortgages, you're building equity into a home, which is a good thing. But with all debt, it's all a matter of how responsible you are. And a mortgage isn't going to do you any good if you wind up being in default on your mortgage and your house winds up being foreclosed on. But the credit cards, that's the biggest burden when it comes to household debt. And part of the reason is, again, because the cost of everything has gone sky high. More and more people are relying on their credit cards to pay for everyday expenses, such as groceries, such as gas, when in theory, credit cards were supposed to be more or less of a kind of a fallback maybe for emergency funds, or maybe once in a while just treat yourself to a high-end item and pay it off every month. 45% of Americans do struggle with a credit card debt, and that's followed by mortgages at 22% and student loans at 19%.
Yeah, those student loans aren't going away, are they? I know Joe Biden just couldn't get that ball across the goal line, and some of the forgiveness might even be rolled back. That's going to be more of a pressing issue for people, isn't it?
Well, it is, because the thing with the student loans, if you are able to get a deferment, and those are an option, if you're really, really struggling, you can get those things deferred, but the interest doesn't go away. So that interest, when you resuming those payments, all that interest that was deferred is going on top of that. So you're not necessarily saving any money. You've just bought yourself a little bit of time.
So keys to debt reduction. You wrote 45% of Americans think that less inflation will help reduce their household debt. I suspect that's the case, but I don't see that happening. There will always be inflation, hopefully, and it's going to be closer to 4% than 2%. I don't know. What's your thought about inflation and what's going to happen to people?
Well, that's key, because this is kind of an extraordinary situation that we're in right now, inflation-wise. Currently, we're sitting at about 3%, and the Fed has a target rate of 2%, which is ideal. There has to be some level of inflation. You don't want to get to where it's deflation. We get into deflation. But, yeah, it's just a question of a time, I think, with this new administration. But the thing is that people are so sick of inflation over the last 4 years, there seems to be this will to not want to wait. They're wanting to see results immediately. Yeah. And that's not always the case with a rate hike or a rate cut. You're not seeing those results instantly. And I think people are just so burned out with inflation, they're wanting to see something immediate.
I think people are burned out with us talking about inflation, too. 2% to me wasn't a magic number. This was a longstanding conversation in the show. Why does it have to be 2%? Why can't it be 2.5% or 2.3% or 3%? You could live with the cost of goods and services going up 2% or 3% a year if, say, wages were increasing at a greater rate, and they had been. But we kept hammering away that we're not at 2%, we're not at 2%, and what's the Fed going to do? And I'm not sure that conversation was entirely productive, because in the meantime, people didn't appreciate that the cost of many things, I'm not talking about eggs, has gone down. Gas, many things in your grocery cart. If you just look at a side-by-side of the things that are in a grocery cart these days, many of them are much less expensive than they have been of late, or at least they have gone down in price relative to wages. And everybody just wants to talk about eggs. I think the conversation about inflation is almost as problematic as inflation itself.
Well, you're right about that. And also, when in terms of inflation, there's also other external factors. And you mentioned things are kind of leveling off a little bit, because part of the problem was post-COVID, we had these supply chain issues, which were creating supply and demand problems. So prices were going up. They are starting to level off a little bit. But when you're talking about inflation, it's sort of cyclical, because inflation affects energy prices, which reflects labor costs, which are being passed on to the consumers. So if you go to a restaurant, you're going to expect to pay more.
Understood. You know, it's funny, though, that as we've all been reminded that inflation is cumulative. So if something went up last year a lot and then a little bit this year, you add the two together to get the price you're currently paying. It's not that often that it starts to go down and we start to subtract from that 9% bulge that we had a few years ago. But for the last couple of years, the number has been manageable. So when people say prices are more expensive today than they were in the past, that should not alarm them. If we hadn't had that one 9% bulge, you know, that frog in the snake there, I wonder how people would feel about the cost of groceries right now.
That's true, John, but part of the problem, too, also is that people's wages are not keeping up with the rate of inflation. So if everything were consistent, people probably wouldn't be complaining as much about high prices. And also your investments. If you have bank accounts that are drawing interest, your interest rates aren't keeping up with inflation. So you're kind of lagging behind as far as your own disposable income in relation to the cost of everything.
And the point of your story was all of this is weighing on people's health. They are they don't have the money to take care of themselves, or just the mental stress of it is hard on them, isn't it?
Yes, that's a huge part of it. And again, you mentioned the insurance thing. People are forced to make tough decisions, whether it means dropping your insurance down to a minimal coverage so you're not as covered for as many things, but you're having to make some very difficult decisions on a lot of key items there.
So what's your advice? Let's wrap this up with some wisdom from you, sir.
Well, obviously, the first thing you want to do is create a budget, a sensible, realistic budget, and stick to it. Don't overspend. Don't impulse buy. That's a key thing. Stay away from impulse buys. And if you have to use a credit card, make sure that you pay off as much of it as you can, preferably pay the whole thing in full, because you're talking about an average interest rate of like 22-23%. And if you're putting everything from fast foods to groceries to gas on it, you're going to be paying massive interest on it well past the time you bought it. You're going to be paying 22% interest on a tank of gas that you purchased 6 months ago.
Boy, that impulse buy thing is one thing that maybe I think some of those things are, of course, correct, but easier said than done. Impulse buys might be something we could all work on. Chip Lupo is a writer and analyst at WalletHub.com. Okay, Chip, thanks for talking to us today.
My pleasure, John. You have a good weekend.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers is about to open in Chicago, this one in Fulton Market. Cranes reports the new location's at 820 West Randolph. That's where Little Goat Diner used to be located. This will be Raising Cane's fifth location in Chicago. The others are near Millennium Park, in Lincoln Park, Wrigleyville, and near Loyola University. The company's website lists a sixth location coming soon at 564 West Taylor. Fabiano Viviani is reportedly eyeing Lake Zurich for a new restaurant. According to Cranes, the 2008 Top Chef and a partner have bought vacant space, but the planning is still in the early stages. Viviani is said to be doing due diligence on feasibility, and the vision for the restaurant hasn't been decided yet. The location is 377 North Rand Road in Lake Zurich. A timeline for the new restaurant hasn't been disclosed. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And I've got a Western Illinois farm boy on the phone.
We have corn, soybeans, and beef cattle.
Nathan Spangler is 20.
Right now I'm at the University of Illinois just trying to learn a couple things that I'll be able to bring back to the farm.
ILL.
I&I.
And the reason he's on with me today is because he may have saved the life of a woman he doesn't know.
It's wild that it all just started from taking 2 minutes out of my day.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Last fall, Nathan Spangler was about to get on a tractor when his cell phone buzzed, telling him he was a match for a woman who needed his stem cells to stay alive.
Then I was on the phone for the next little while just figuring out what all the donation process would entail.
It all began when he joined Farmhouse Fraternity at the U of I, and one of the house's projects was BeTheMatch.org, which is now rebranded as NMDP, the National Marrow Donor Program. All 40 or so of the guys in the house were swabbed, and that was it, except for Nathan.
I had matched with a young lady who had a rare autoimmune disease.
He says he never thought about saying no to being a stem cell donor, so he and his mom, Holly, got on a plane to Florida.
They take care of all the expenses, and so we got in on Sunday. We had time to kind of just hang out on the beach, enjoy ourselves for a little bit.
And the next day, he started getting shots.
That essentially boosted my stem cell production throughout my body.
Then the actual stem cell transfer took place, IVs in both of his arms.
Yeah, blood coming out of one arm, goes into the machine, they're extracting the stem cells, and then it's coming back into my other arm.
And that was it. Just a few days out of his life, and he may have saved someone else's.
I'd really encourage anyone to sign up for this registry, because it's unbelievable the amount of good that you can do through it.
You can sign up at nmdp.org. That's nmdp.org.
And you never know whose life you'll be able to save.
On the food calendar, it's National Cream-Filled Chocolates Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Jason Lesnevich is with us again, the Senior Director of Cultural Tourism at Choose Chicago. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you guys put out a guide regularly? Like, do you update it with things to do in the city? How does that go?
No, it's our annual guide. We'll produce it at the beginning of the year. You know, we try to fill it with content that is useful all year along. So it comes out early at the year. Our teams use it all throughout the year. What we really do is, you know, a lot of the content will link back to our website where we can be much more nimble and update that with the most up-to-date content on Chicago.
So the Choose Chicago website is the digital view, but you do come out with a 68-page actual visitor's guide as well?
We do. We print, you know, print isn't dead at all. It's one of the many tools we use to promote our city, to inspire travel and let people plan their trips to Chicago. And we print 200,000 of these. You can find them at the airports, the Macy's Visitor Center, McCormick Place, and other locations. We put them in hotels. People order them. You can order a free copy off our website. You can view it digitally on our website. So a lot of people utilize our visitor guide each year.
It's really beautiful. It's well done. It's smart. I don't have the new one, but I had last year's. How is this one different? Just kind of walk us through some of the chapters or sections.
Yeah, you know, it starts with the cover. This year, we did not do a typical kind of beauty shot of Chicago. We worked with a local artist. His name's Fernando Feds, F-E-D-Z, and then Caldera is his last name. And we've been working with local artists, partnering with them, elevating their work. So he has a beautiful illustrated cover for us, celebrating Chicago being voted as the best big city 8 years in a row, which happened back in 2024. But then we really get into, you know, there's about 12 different spreads. Our festivals and events, we try to highlight some of the major events and festivals per season. We did an interview with the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters on our local theater scene. We have, you know, must-see sites. We have neighborhood culture and global cuisine, family fun. We even have an article on, it's called On Location. It's about, you know, historic film sites, film tours, everything you really want to know kind of to experience, you know, the filming that's done in Chicago, which is always very popular. You know, even, you know, with season 4 of The Bear being announced, people want to know where all those sites are that they see on TV. We do an article on Chicago Pride and different attractions, events, and, you know, LGBTQ plus owned businesses. So it really runs the gamut of all the great things that Chicago represents.
My pitch would be that everybody in the Chicago area should have this, not because we're tourists, but we have friends and family that visit, and then they say, what do we want to do? And then we draw a blank because we haven't thought like a tourist. But then here's the guide. It tells you what the next event is, when and where is the St. Patrick's Day parade this year, or whatever, right? And then some of the cultural mainstays, but it's just a real nice, handy guide, isn't it?
Yeah, we put a lot of work into it. You know, I would say Chicagoans, if they read through the guide, they're going to find things that they don't know about Chicago, a new restaurant they might want to try in a neighborhood they've been thinking about visiting. And we do know as people order and pick up the guides that Chicagoans do utilize it. And we're really proud of that. You know, we start planning this in May for it to come out, the following February. So it's a big initiative of ours, and we're really proud of it.
Well, I'll click on Choose Chicago. I don't think I'm going to be alone on this now. ChooseChicago.com. ChooseChicago.com. It's out. Jason Lesnevich, good job in advance. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.